Hey folks, welcome to the Leader Feeder podcast. It's Kirk Langford, General Manager of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And we're doing a special episode today. I'm here with Greg Schinkel, our president.
Hey, I'm not Suzanne Jakes, who by the way, does a great job. And she was so nice that she decided she would produce this episode. And let me sit in her chair. I really appreciate that. She does such a great job of, and you guys are so good conversationally. Often that's the time when I hear the episode when it's released. I really enjoy the banter that you guys have. Yeah. And just so joining you is a real honor on this one.
Yeah, well, hey, we're glad to have you here. It's always nice to get to chat with you about, I mean, really anything, but especially leadership, right? That's kind of our jam. It's what we love to chat about. And so we're doing our Rewind episode. It's our second Rewind episode of the Leader Feeder podcast. So it's a chance for us to kind of look back at the past 6 months of episodes and kind of go, what stuck out? And so what we're going to be highlighting today, of course, is episodes that you, the audience, have found interesting through kind of your engagement, through the metrics that we get fed, you know, that we get told about. We're going to highlight a couple episodes and clips that you folks have found interesting, which is kind of cool.
And like, obviously, you know, now that we're halfway through the year, now's the time to make a couple of additional adjustments to your leadership approach, because when you change your leadership approach, you change the outcomes. And, you know, one of the episodes that I know performed well, and it always performs well, this topic, is really around workplace negativity. And then we have a secondary clip, but they share a common theme. So let's look at the first one, which is dealing with workplace negativity.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if someone's being negative on the floor, or, I mean, heaven forbid, disrespectful, because, I mean, you need to address that almost promptly, I should say, right? Nip it. So how would you suggest that these frontline leaders go about having a conversation to address that?
Yeah, that's a bit of a tricky one.
It
for
is
sure.
a tricky
if someone's,
one.
You know, especially if someone's kind of perpetually negative and you're trying to turn that around, that can be tough, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we say generally is that it's very hard to, it may be even impossible to really know or change someone's attitude, like how they think about something. What you can focus on are the behaviors. So what they actually say or do rather than how they think. So it's always interesting when I guess I'm the one that was saying this stuff in the first place to then go, yes, I said that, you know, but you know, there's lots of stuff that we learn from each other, from other training. And so it's so true though, right? Workplace negativity can be, it can be really toxic. It can be really hard to overcome. And yet I think at the end of the day, focusing not on the person's attitude, because there's lots of reasons a person might have a specific attitude or a negative attitude, rather. It could be stuff from their personal life. It could be stuff from, you know, other places that you know, we only see a little glimpse of, or we don't hear about at all. That I think it really comes down to, like, let's focus on the specific behaviors that we need to address, rather than, you know, you're such a negative person, because there might be stuff going on that we're not even aware of that then they're going, well, yeah, I'm normally not like this. And if we just say, hey, I noticed something's been getting you down lately, these behaviors have kind of stood out for me, I think it just shifts the conversation completely.
Yeah, what I really liked is the fact that you highlighted again how we don't know how people are thinking inside, but what we observe is the behavior.
That's right.
And if we're talking about behavior, although they might still get a little defensive about it, they won't get as defensive as if you start labeling them as negative. Yeah. Because I don't know about you, but if somebody says I'm negative, I'll go, I'm not negative.
Yeah.
I might be saying something that's negative or critical or complaining.
I consider myself as a positive person generally.
Yeah, and maybe in my mind, I see it as I'm raising issues and concerns.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, someone else raised with me that stop using the word complaint, because complaint is not something someone wants to be accused of,
mm-hmm.
but just the issue you've raised or the concern that you've raised. But, you know, again, you're just trying to help the person understand that the way that you expressed it or the repeatedness of how you express it is perceived probably as negative or not helping us find a solution.
100%. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's moving into our next clip. You know, it's that idea of talking about when we notice poor performance. So moving from more of what we'd consider a negative attitude to thinking about poor performance, as you're going to see in a moment when we talk about it, right? The solution, funny enough, is almost the same. So let's take a look at the clip and then we'll chat.
Poor performance without making someone defensive.
Yeah, diving right into the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to addressing poor performance, I think what you want to try to focus on is the behavior that's causing or that you feel is causing the poor performance. One is that don't focus on the personality. So, you know, saying something like, oh, you've been really lazy lately and that's why your numbers are down. That's kind of focusing on them as a person, that they're just a lazy person. Mm-hmm. And that's going to get someone's back up a lot more than if you were to say, hey, I've noticed that our numbers are down. You know, can you help me understand what's going on? Because we're not meeting our quota. Mm-hmm. You're not saying anything about who they are as a person. You're lazy or you don't care or anything like that.
And you're not making assumptions about who they are.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you want to avoid, using things that describe them as a person rather than just specific behavior.
So again, you know, just this link between behaviors, because the performance is what happens after the behavior occurs. Right. So if I just talk about somebody's bad performance or inadequate performance, I'm missing the fact that to improve their performance, it's like a sports coach would say, here's the key to the game. We got to score more goals than those other guys. Well, thanks, coach. But maybe talk about, really, you know, helpful. Our strategy of how we would get ourselves in a position to score more goals or keep the other team from scoring more goals. So I loved it because you said avoid words like lazy. And that's sort of like in the previous clip when you talked about not saying somebody's negative.
Yeah.
So labeling someone as lazy is not the same as saying, hey, your numbers have dropped off, right? So I just thought that was cool. The best phrase that pays from what I heard you say was, help me understand, which is a great way, or can you help me understand, which is a great way of replacing the word why. Because when you said why, I almost picture that interrogation, right? Where
why are your numbers? Why are you performing?
Why didn't you show up by your curfew?
That's right. Right? That's right.
It's like, it's sort of accusatory, whereas help me understand, or can you help me understand this? I think it's just a great turn of phrase.
And I think too, you want to, and doing what we're talking about, what comes to mind for me is that you're going from a blame conversation where I've identified that the performance is low and I found who to blame for it into a feedback conversation. My job as your leader is to help you reach your goals. It's to help you reach performance goals. And so if you're not reaching those goals, I have two options. I can come down hard on you and try and, you know, what's going on? But is that really going to make you feel better? Is that going to make you work harder? I mean, maybe out of fear for a little while, but that gets exhausting both as an employee living under that kind of regime, but also as a leader always having to use fear. But instead, if you're coming from a place of saying, hey, my job is to help remove barriers and obstacles, it's to help you perform, help me understand why you're not performing so I can get a better understanding of what you can do differently or what I can do differently. I think right there, it's now a feedback conversation rather than whose head do I have to take for this? And that just completely changes, I think, not only the nature of that conversation, but the nature of the relationship between the leader and the employee overall.
And you do have to think about it. It's not just a transaction of fixing that issue.
Yes.
You're building a relationship that delivers higher performance over time.
Yes.
And just knowing how this is a key part of the frontline leadership program, which is really just how do you give feedback or address behavior and performance issues.
Yeah.
This is just a great refresher for people.
Definitely.
It's just so easy to get so personal and too quickly. And you got to think about the emotional scarring that leaves behind.
Yes.
And then that brought us actually a nice segue maybe into the next episode, which is really where you and Suzanne were talking about the challenge of managing older employees when you're younger. And we'll talk about how that's a flip from what's been a recent concern. So let's see this discussion about managing older or more seasoned workers.
The current biggest challenge at the moment is that we have a lot of, there are still baby boomers in the workforce, right? And there are still Gen X in the workforce, and they are getting older. They're getting a lot closer to retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
And yet a lot of leaders in organizations are not baby boomers and they're not Gen X. They're those up and coming frontline leaders, which is of course the folks that we work with the most. They are millennials and even some Generation Alphas. And so I think what we're seeing is that we have young leaders, people in their 20s, maybe early 30s, having to lead teams of people who are older than them. And they find it a challenge because I think in a more traditional sense, it's sort of like the older person is the leader and they get to kind of say what happens. And so if you're 25 or, you know, even early 30s and you're leading someone who is 50 or 60, I think we struggle to know how to do that effectively. And that would be probably, I would say, one of the biggest issues that we're seeing is how do younger people manage those older employees that aren't yet retired and are kind of near the end of their careers. So my first comment it's always funny when you're watching yourself, you know, play back later, because there's things you say that you don't necessarily realize. I realized I said Gen Alpha when I meant to say Gen Z, because of course Gen Alpha is still quite young. I don't think there's tons of Gen Alphas in the workforce.
I'm
but
I'm just impressed that you even know what all the words are. I've been around for more than 3 decades.
Depends on the day, but what I love about that clip is that I think what it means is that it doesn't have to be really scary to be a younger employee managing people who are older than you, whether they're seasoned, whether they're brand new. I think it's more about an approach. And I think the other thing it boils down to, like from the clip, is everybody wants to be treated with respect. Yeah. Everybody wants to be afforded a certain level of trust in by their employee and by their leader, right? Mm-hmm. Both ways. And so I think if we have that initial base of trust and respect, it makes it much easier as a younger person to engage with and to motivate and to manage someone older than you, right?
I mean, if we go back 5, 7, 10 years ago, and what has been repeated generation after generation, mm-hmm. is usually we were talking about managing younger employees.
Yes.
So I love that you flipped this. I also think that if you're having any performance conversation, whether you're younger and talking to someone who's been in the workforce longer or is older than you, again, it's around being objective in your observations about the behavior that you're seeing, about the data and the performance, and not being accusational of, hey, I just wanted to come to understand this better. I like that turn of phrase again.
Yeah.
Can you help me understand? Let's take a look at this together. Mm-hmm. Let's see what we can do to improve performance.
And as a younger person, I think it's also about, this isn't from the clip, but I just, you know, as we continue to talk, we always get great ideas. It's also about not being assumptive. Just because someone is from a different generation, it doesn't mean that they are going to act like the stereotype of that generation. So when you're a younger leader talking to someone who's older, you don't want to say things like, well, I know technology is going to be a struggle for you, Tim, because you're a baby boomer. You know, instead just saying, help me understand why this process is causing you some issues so we can help you get over it, right? It's a dangerous trap.
One of my mom's friends is 93, and he used to run a tech company. So at 93, I think his technical knowledge is better than me. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that then brought to us to the second clip from that episode, which is really empowering your team to help each other. I thought that was a unique spin. Let's have a look.
That empowerment of, hey, you know, Sophia, you're really great with this technology. You really understand how this machine works and kind of what the kinks are that we need to figure out with this machine. Can you work with Jim to help him understand it?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's struggling. That's the best thing you could do, because that's empowering your team to work with each other, and it's helping them collaborate. Well, I mean, I think any leader would say at the end of the day, if they had a team that could just empower each other to solve each other's problems and answer each other's questions, I mean, wouldn't it be a great world we're living in, right? Where the leader really just gets to focus on that higher level stuff of like growing the department and improving the department, rather than feeling like they have to run the department day after day. And that's part of what this is talking about, right? And I think it's also talking about that coach approach of like, involve the team, let them help each other rather than the boss having to come in and save the day, answer all the questions and solve all the problems, just to either show that they can, or because that's kind of the norm that's been established on that team. So flipping that whole thing on its head and saying, let them empower each other and then as a positive, I think, result of that, you get this team that's like, oh, we don't have to just rely on the leader to solve all the problems.
Yeah,
how empowering.
Yeah. You shift from the hub and spoke where everyone's got to come to the leader for all the answers, and they check in with each other for help. And I also like that you, I don't know whether you did this on purpose or not, but it's quite flattering to go to a team member and say, you know, you've got a lot of knowledge in this area, and I think you could be of help to this other person. And I think that adds value. It values them.
Yeah.
So it's such a multi, and actually you did this, whether you realize it or not, because the clip was, we took the two clips out of the same episode. It's also, you're really talking about empowering a younger person to work with an older colleague. Mm-hmm. And of course, it could be vice versa. Yeah. It's just bridges these gaps. And again, instead of us and them, it's just us working together.
Greg, I'd love to claim that I very intentionally made this beautiful bridge between those two things, but we're gonna say that it was somewhat haphazard and just kind of worked out nicely.
And if you want the whole truth, of course, listen to the entire episode.
There you go.
The next one, next episode, again, a couple of clips here. One was this diversity, and I think, you know, diversity is kind of a hot button topic, and I'm really glad that you and Suzanne still raised it and brought it up. But you had a different, totally different take on diversity, and I noticed it was even reflected in the commentary.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like people just, I think they liked it, but it's so different.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a look at the clip.
you know, having a diverse team is a team that, yeah, it could be people from different ethnicities or people who speak different languages, but it can also just be people of different ages, people of different technical ability, people of different years of experience, people coming from different industries, just anything that instead of everyone kind of having the exact same credentials, the exact same experience, people come to the table with different experiences, different skills, different knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's really what we think of when we think of a diverse team.
So again, you know, when you think about the diversity, you really broadened that definition.
For sure.
What was your thinking behind that?
Well, I think the problem is it's when we look at diversity as being one thing. It's just skin color or it's just gender or it's whatever. I think that's where we fall really short in terms of a definition. And because it's the other thing I think about is in the clip I'm talking about, you get so many different ideas and experience and every little piece of what makes somebody somebody that's different from somebody else is going to bring different experience and exposure. So it's not just different age groups that have different experiences. It's not just different skin colors. It's not just different genders. It's all of those different things. So that's really where that comes from. And I think, you know, one of the comments that I found really interesting on this clip was basically someone saying, you know, well, Kirk, yeah, you're basically describing every single team. You've got different ages, you've got different races, you've got different, and it's like, yeah, that's a good thing. But I mean, there are companies that, you know, in the past had more of a, okay, we're only going to hire Harvard grads, or we're only going to hire, you know, people from a certain area or from other that have come from a certain company with a certain history. That's obviously more what we're talking about when we say, you know, try not to hire all the same people with the same qualifications and the same experience and the same knowledge, because you really don't get the depth and breadth of the diversity or the benefit of that diversity.
We're talking about different perspectives. Yeah, and it's sort of like instead of being a rugged individualist thinking you've got to solve all the problems or falling into the trap that we all do, which is to naturally affiliate with people who are like us and think like us. And it just narrows down the number of options if you're solving a problem or trying to move something forward. Just the fact that people have had all these different experiences, I think that was pretty awesome.
What's interesting about this, though, and I mentioned this in the episode, is that I think we celebrate diversity a lot, but then we're supposed to hide the negative things. And one of the negative things about sometimes more diversity is conflict. Conflict comes up a lot more because there's way more values, ideas, beliefs, opinions being brought in. And that's bound to cause a little bit of conflict, which is what the second clip is about that we're going to share. So we'll roll that and then we'll chat a little bit about it. It's important as a leader that we don't see conflicts as this terrible thing we need to run away from. And we just want to be non-confrontational. Instead, we want to say, hey, conflict can be good because it means that there's different ideas coming out of the woodwork and we're trying different things. But how do we manage conflict constructively?
Well, you know, it just reminds me again in our course when we're teaching managing conflict in the frontline leadership course, we talk about that, is conflict bad? Well, no, conflict isn't bad. Conflict is just this heat from the friction of us having different opinions in some cases or different viewpoints on solutions. And so if you think about it, having diverse points of view means we're not going to jump only on one solution. We're going to actually disagree a little bit, and disagreeing will actually help us get to a better solution.
That's right. Yeah, we're not going to jump to the solution of the loudest person or just the one person that two or three people agree with. We're going to say, well, wait, you know, Tim over here has his hand up and he maybe has a solution that's a little bit different than what we would have typically done. And I think it's so easy in conflict resolution when you're solving a problem, for example, to go with what seems maybe easiest, what you've just done in the past. And then sometimes you have to look at the track record. So, you know, a practical example, we have a machine that's broken down. We're trying to figure out what to do to get it back running again. We go, well, the past three times it's broken down, we did this. So you start to default. You can already feel the pendulum go, well, we're just going to do what we've always done. And then someone raises their hand and goes, well, why don't we try this? Well, this is what we've always done. Yeah, but that's what you've always done. And it's continued to break every 2 or 3 months. What if this person's solution could make it where the machine doesn't go down for a year? So it's just that beauty of like broadening our horizons just a little bit, right? We're not changing the world by having a new idea come in, but we're making things just a little bit different, exploring some new perspectives, like you said. And I think that can really strengthen our team and help us find new ways of doing things.
Well, and you're trying to avoid this idea of demonizing the person who disagrees with me, and also just acknowledging that having disagreements over the method of what to do or the goal or the tactic, those are all things that we should be able to talk about without feeling defensive and not escalate them to be this giant, like, you just don't care like I care, or you just don't have the experience like I have. It's like, no, let's actually see. My favorite is actually when you ask a newer team member who hasn't been there, if they have questions or observations, and then they point out this thing that everyone is probably just taken for granted, and that's the breakthrough idea. So again, just leaders recognizing you almost want a little bit of friction around what are the different points of view that this thing could be.
I actually read, I think once in a, I think it was a Harvard Business Review article that basically said, if you don't have friction, now this was talking about between teams, but if you don't have conflict between departments, you have a problem. Because it said, for example, your operations department, one of their big things is trying to standardize, right? Make SOPs and trying to standardize the processes and everything you do. And yet research and development's whole mission is to shake things up. And so that there's inherent conflict built right into it. So isn't that kind of interesting that you should want that? And the biggest thing comes down to not whether it's there or not, because it's going to be there. The question is, how do you handle it as the leader?
I think that those are great tips. So the next episode, you know, we had a couple good clips there. And this is around this whole theme that we've been talking around, which is making sure that the right person does the right work at the right level.
That's right.
And that means many leaders are still doing busy work that others could take care of. And it's not to diminish that. Take a look at the clip.
If you have admin work that someone else can help you with from your team, empower them to do so. I know sometimes we think, I have to be the one to file that report, or I have to be the one to create that or do that. But if there's any chance that somebody on your team can help you, leverage that help. Don't feel the need to do it on your own.
Yeah, so maybe the admin tasks can maybe be some of the tasks you can offload.
Yeah, and in certain cases, yes, there's certain reports or paperwork that you as the leader, you have to be the one to fill it out. Mm-hmm. You have to be the one to submit it for sure. But in situations where there's some flexibility or you could get some assistance, make sure you do that. And again, the other piece, use that positive leadership trap piece of you proactively reaching out to your team in order to free up a little bit of free time to find more time for admin work so that there's a bit more of a balance. Because I know for a lot of leaders, they say, you know, I'm supposed to be spending more time on the floor. I spend so much time in my office doing admin work. And so if you can find, use the leadership proactive approach, it's going to make it a little bit easier to find time for that. So of course, you know, empowering your team brings up a lot about the leadership trap and making sure that you're touching base with your people, they have work that is fulfilling and that they want to do, and that you're not doing stuff that someone else could be doing. And again, like you said, it's not about, you know, schlucking off the work you don't want to do. It's about finding the right person to do the work and making sure that you're doing the appropriate work to reach the goals of your team or your department. But this also brings up this idea, this empowerment brings up this idea of something you talk about a lot, which is decision-making waste. So maybe you want to talk a little bit about that.
So decision-making waste, and again, we have some good videos on that. Mm. It's the fact that if I have a plant manager solving problems that the supervisor or the team member should have solved, it's basically this waste of attention and waste of skill on something that really doesn't require your level of skill. And we don't think of it as being waste because we think, oh, we're just being helpful. But technically, if I do that too much, I'm not doing the things that I really do add the most value on.
There you go.
Improving and growing the business.
That's right.
And to your point around the leadership trap, I always think of the function of the offensive line in football, and these are the big guys that block at the very front. And I'll ask a class, what is their function? Well, block and tackle. And it's like, but what do they really do to add value? Well, they give the quarterback time. Essentially to make a decision, read the field of play. And so I think some of these things we're talking about, it's just being conscious of it so that you can empower your team to do the work that they love. I also remember one business owner, he says, there's A items on your list. There's B items and there's C items. So the C items, you don't enjoy doing them. You really don't add much value.
You
procrastinate them. Someone else on your team, that C item actually might be something interesting, something different, something
because that it uses their skill set. They're very detail oriented and you're not. So instead you're right. Instead of thinking, well, I wouldn't want to pass it off to somebody else because I don't even want to do it. Maybe you don't want to do it because it doesn't fit your skill set, but someone else's skill set is perfectly matched to do that task.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you went to an age old topic as a part of that. Still that episode, and that was to do or embrace servant leadership. So let's take a look at that.
Try to find most of your time for that, because that's your primary role as a leader, right? Is to make sure that you are that the work is getting done through your team.
Is that called servant leadership now that we're kind of talking about?
Well,
is that kind
of servant leadership is really about being available to your team and not really this top-down leadership style where it's I'm the boss and you got to do what I say, but it's more about how can I help you? How can I serve you as your leader? How can I help make sure the work gets done? What can I do to make your job easier? What can I do to remove barriers? So I love the idea of servant leadership, and maybe I'm speaking very personally here, but I love it because as a leader, I like the idea that I don't have to have all the answers and I'm not there to take care of everybody all the time. I you know, that sense of the servant, the sense of what can I do to help you? What can I do to make your life easier? I know you've got a handle on your job. I know that you're a qualified individual. That's why you're here. But what can I do just to make things a little bit easier? Rather than I have to run my department like a tightly run ship and I've got to meet all these deadlines. Maybe it just makes me feel a little bit less pressure as a leader to go, I'm really here just to help make things a little bit easier for everybody and just let's get the work done in the best way possible. Yeah, so that's what I like about it.
I mean, I love it when you go into your angry voice like that, as if like there's always this like really angry boss and this chomping on a cigar and you know, pounding the table.
Let's go.
Which I never see from you, which is this must be your alter ego.
That's right.
But this whole idea that essentially it flips the organization upside down. So servant leadership is that instead of the boss having people that make them happy, it's really like our job is really to support the people who add the value. And those are usually the people delivering the actual work product.
Exactly.
So everybody else's role is really just a support function of making sure that they can deliver it. Yeah. But we fall in this militaristic trap of like the generals in charge and then the sergeants. And it's about keeping those people happy as opposed to what can I do to reduce your frustrations? And if you think about how your team responds when you remove an obstacle and how like if you could take something that really irritates me away, that is going to be a big gain. So
that's right.
And they'll love you forever as a leader if you do that. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And yeah, so moving into our last clip, it's something that we talk about a lot in our course. I mean, we have a whole module on communication, a couple different pieces on communication, but we take part of just that module to talk about this piece, and it's about sarcasm and how sarcasm really, without realizing it in a lot of cases, I think can undermine your leadership. So let's take a look at the clip.
I mean, I know some leaders tend to rely on sarcasm, right, kind of lean into it. I think it's okay to have a little bit of sarcasm, especially maybe with people that you know better or have been on your team longer. But I really think frontline leaders would do better to really limit the amount of sarcasm they use, because I don't think they realize how much their sarcasm actually leads to a destabilizing effect on the team.
Right. Well, like you said, if someone's coming, you know, maybe coming into work late often, when you're being sarcastic, saying, oh, you... No, well, glad you showed up today. Yeah. You can see how that would be very confusing maybe to someone where like that's actually a more serious situation coming to work late and you're making it into something and that person then starts thinking, oh, I guess it's
serious?
Okay because it's a big joke or
that's a
not
point.
Take it seriously.
We might underestimate how important or severe something is because if we're hiding behind sarcasm, there's a big difference between, oh, well, you managed to show up today, congratulations, versus this is the third time this week you've been late. I'm concerned. We need to have a chat about that because I do expect you to be on time.
Boy, so do I ever resemble that remark on sarcasm, because I can be sarcastic and I you know, I've been aware of it and I do less of it than I used to, and I especially do less of it when I'm talking about performance. And I think, like as you said, having a little sarcasm is just maybe your quirky personality or something that just lightens up the mood sometimes, but it can easily be misinterpreted.
Yeah, it can get toxic, right? And I think it's misinterpreted, like we say there in the clip, in situations where maybe it's a new employee, so they don't know if this is kind of the norm for communication. Maybe an employee where the language isn't the same language they're used to speaking a lot, so you know, they're not understanding that it's really meant to be humor. Sometimes younger employees, like there's lots of situations where someone might go, I didn't know you were joking, or I can't tell if they're joking. And when we're creating that lack of clarity, I mean, one of the things that I think you're supposed to do, one of your primary things as a leader is to clarify. And sarcasm, unfortunately, just creates clouds and just totally unclarifies, right?
Well, Jason McKenzie, you know, one of our instructors, and he brought this up in our new site leader development program, talks about the leader's role is to relentlessly remove ambiguity, which is just the same as clarifying.
Right. Exactly.
So think about how sarcasm creates ambiguity sometimes. Mm-hmm. Your words, your tone, your body language, your facial expressions are not in sync with one another.
Yep.
And so people who know you really well might know that you're kidding, but there is also this, like, and you highlighted in the clip, there can be this perception of disrespect.
Yeah,
I think
course.
that is in there. And it's about overusing it.
Yeah.
So if it's been your one trick pony, it's really tough to change it.
Yeah.
I would just say, just say it straighter more often, and people will probably just appreciate that you're not always joking about something that maybe is quite serious.
Yeah. I think what I also think about is, you know, in the episode of your podcast, the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast, you sat down with Dr. Gwen Acton and you talked about how bad bosses breed bad bosses. And and basically what you were saying was that, you know, if all you have to go on is bad examples, you will probably use those bad examples as your roadmap of what to do. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing happens in sarcasm. I hear when we know when I teach our course with our clients, I hear examples of, well, my boss was really sarcastic, or, you know, my boss has always been sarcastic and I've been fine with it.
Yeah.
Or even more so, well, they've all been sarcastic and I'm good. And I think it's the question of, are you good because of that? Or are you good in spite of that? Yeah. Right. And so to your point, if it's the only thing you know, and it's that one trick pony, it is hard to just shut it off. It's hard to go in tomorrow and say, I will be very sincere and very direct.
Well, your team wouldn't know how to take you.
Sure. Yeah. But I think, like you said, it's about reducing it a little bit, but also understanding that as a leader, and this is what you talk about with Gwen Acton, is it, as a leader, you might not realize that you're passing on, you're a leader to somebody and they're learning from your example. So just think about, you know, yeah, my boss was really sarcastic, and so I've adopted this kind of sarcastic maybe tone or method, but is this what I want to pass on to the people that I am mentoring, the people that look up to me right now?
Is this like a crossover episode, like Grey's Anatomy and Station 19 coming together, like the AOP and Leader Feeder coming together?
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that you and Suzanne are doing a great job. I just love the rapport that the two of you have.
Likewise.
I know it's resonating a lot with the audience. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider subscribing. And otherwise, it's just been a pleasure to look back on some of those episodes for 6 months.
Had a great time. Thanks, Greg.
All right.
Yeah.
Take care.